Hi, folks. I'm Denise Howell, and we're here today about to talk to Peter Joyner on Uneven Distribution, my show where we look at the way the future is here, but not yet quite evenly distributed, with a nod to William Gibson, the originator of that quote. Peter, hi. Welcome to the show. It's great to see you.
Hey, Denise. Thanks for having me.
And we're going to talk today about the future of healthcare, since Peter is right there in the thick of it, working at a startup that is going to chart some of the future of healthcare. So, Peter, I can't thank you enough for joining us here today. I know part of the reason I do this show is just because I have so many questions about the things in our world that affect us all and what's going to happen with them and how confusing institutions like healthcare need to be unpacked and thought about. So that's what we're going to do for about an hour here today until we wrap things up. So Peter, hope you're locked and loaded and feeling good.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thanks for having me on, Denise, and appreciate the warm introduction.
My pleasure. It's a thrill to be here with you. I've known Peter basically all his life, so I know that you're going to enjoy hearing his insights on the thorny and complicated topic of health, healthcare, and medicine. So let's start right off, Peter, and talk about emerging tech. Which kinds of technologies do you think will have the biggest impact on these areas, health, healthcare, and medicine?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of kind of big themes that excite me in particular. I think the first one, which this is a theme in many different industries, and I think healthcare is no different, which is AI. I think there's huge potential to make healthcare more efficient with artificial intelligence. And so I think that's one big bucket. A second bucket, I would say, is in a category of kind of preventative healthcare. And I think there are things like wearables, things like diagnostic tests that, you know, are becoming more accessible to folks to help kind of prevent healthcare events from happening down the line and be a bit more proactive in your healthcare instead of reactive. So that's another one. I would say continued development in drugs. And this is, you know, something we see in oncology a lot with targeted therapies that are based on, you know, specific genomics that make someone a better fit for drug A versus drug B. And then other drugs like, you know, GLP-1s that have kind of taken the world by storm from a weight loss perspective. So I think new treatments coming to, you know, better meet healthcare needs is another huge one. And then the last one I would say is outpatient procedures and hospital at home. I think, you know, I had a really interesting conversation with someone who said that hip replacements used to be done, you know, entirely in hospitals. And now there are outpatient facilities that are doing those types of surgeries. And so I think that that will have a huge impact on healthcare as well. So those are kind of, I would say that, that, you know, big buckets that I'm really excited about in terms of technology and healthcare.
What was the one acronym you just used? CLP-1?
GLP-1.
What is that?
Yeah, so GLP-1 therapies are, you know, they I think originally were for diabetes and kind of managing A1C levels. And essentially one of the effects of GLP-1s is pretty significant weight loss. And so you will have seen, you know, lots of commercials, like Ozempic is one I've seen out there a fair bit. And it's definitely one in kind of the celebrity world. I think it's becoming more and more popular. And obviously obesity is a huge issue in the United States and in the world. And so, you know, these are drugs that can help address that issue and that, you know, from a technology perspective are very exciting.
What's the tech angle with these Ozempic-like drugs?
Well, I think it's just, you know, it's a different type of, you know, mechanism of action that is, you know, being used to, you know, treat weight loss that hasn't been used before, right? So I think it's just a new mechanism to treat weight loss in terms of the way that the drug works. And, you know, I think from that perspective, that's where the technology comes into play.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I've certainly bumped into people in my life recently who all of a sudden are quite a bit thinner than they used to be. And you know that, well, yeah, I haven't had the deep probing conversations with them, but I'm pretty sure that that's the driving force behind it. And it's great. You know, it's, I'm sure they're happy and grateful for it. Do you see any downside to it though?
Yeah. I mean, I know this is something that I'm sure we'll get into in kind of more detail, but I think one of the things that's really cool about today is in the healthcare sphere is people have more access to information than they ever had. They have more ability to, I think, kind of intervene in their health and have an impact, which I think, you know, can be a really positive thing when we think about, you know, folks that are tracking their glucose just to see how different foods spike their sugar and wearing continuous glucose monitors, or, you know, folks that are tracking their diet and what they eat through, you know, different types of apps or experiences that help them eat a healthier diet and get to where they need to be. So I think all of the information and tools that are available to people, it can be really positive, but I think it can also be a little bit scary because, you know, there's a lot of disinformation out there. And I think, you know, there's a lot of good information. There's a lot of bad. And I think, you know, what people do with that information is ultimately going to determine the impact. And so, you know, vaccines is a good topic where people have been, you know, split on that in, you know, kind of the media and in the public. And I think it's, you know, you want people to use the information to its advantage to help them. And I think when there's bad information out there, it can have the opposite effect.
Yeah, 100%. And you can't just use these tools and this data in a vacuum. It has to be used in connection with a healthcare professional to give people the correct guidance for their best possible outcome, right?
Exactly.
Right. So I know, for example, my mom has a little home blood pressure machine where she's communicating with her doctor daily as to what her blood pressure is. I think that's an incredible kind of development to be able to track that daily instead of just visit to the doctor, which can be, you know, a month or more than 1 month apart. What other kinds of examples could you give us as to how people are communicating or will communicate with their healthcare professionals?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. There's, you know, I think there's different ways that people are kind of interacting with healthcare professionals within their network and outside of their network as well. So I think there's been a lot of cool developments in sort of the, what I would call the consumer health brand space, where there are companies that are basically addressing specific needs in healthcare. So there might be, you know, women who are seeking out, you know, birth control as an example that don't want to go to their primary doctor for whatever reason. There are companies that can help enable that access and kind of offer an affordable solution for patients. There are, things for the men's health side of things as well. And there's a number of these different companies that are almost, I think, you know, designed to be online experiences where you can interact with doctors, have a sort of specialized care team, those sorts of things directly through the app and whatnot. And I also think within, you know, the primary healthcare space, one of the things that COVID generally did is, you know, telemedicine became a lot more available. And so, you know, through my insurance company, they have a thing called MyChart, where I can send a message to my doctor, my primary care provider, you know, ask him anything and you know, he can get back to me quite quickly. You know, I can also see all of my test results, those sorts of things. So I think that doctors in general, regardless of where you fall in sort of the healthcare sphere and what type of need you're addressing, have become a bit more accessible through technology, which I think is a really big win for, you know, the patient at the end of the day.
Right. It used to be, I think, that people could call up their doctor and actually reach them on the phone in the middle of the day or in the middle of the night and ask them questions and get advice. And I think we've moved away from that kind of model, you know, some time ago. So that's a really nice development to be able to communicate with them online, if not synchronously, at least asynchronously, and hopefully within a reasonable amount of time. I guess all this conversation we're having about back and forth with one doctor and data about oneself being collected and communicated through various devices sort of begs the privacy question. Have you seen a whole lot of developments or attention in that arena?
You know, I think it's a really interesting one. And I think it's one that's, I think, something to look out for in the future, in my opinion. I think, you know, with artificial intelligence and just the availability of kind of data and, you know, increasing cybercrime in terms of just, you know, people, the way that they're using technology, I think it can be a little bit scary to think about the amount of information that is out there on people's health. And if there was any sort of breach of data, the types of, you know, obviously intimate details that someone might have in their, you know, healthcare medical profile. And so I do think that's something to watch in kind of the years to come, because it's great that there's so much more data out there. And I think it's really important for us to make informed decision about our health and to prevent, you know, things down the line that we could see early with data. But on the other hand, you know, with all that data availability, you know, that can be a risk in terms of people's, you know, private, confidential medical information, you know, if that was able to be accessed.
Right. And as you point out, I mean, you could really build a whole profile of somebody's health history, health issues that should be confidential and secure. And they might not be if companies are not taking the appropriate steps and the steps that are more and more required by regulators. So definitely something that everyone in this field has to be paying attention to, or the future of this is going to look a little bit bleak, or we're going to have some bad example headline splashy news stories along those lines. You mentioned AI. Let's talk about the role of AI in the future of all this. There are the multiple roles, I would say. How do you envision AI entering into various steps of our health and healthcare equation?
Yeah, so I think in general, where AI will play a kind of critical role is, number one, in making healthcare a bit more efficient. So I think AI has the ability to kind of remove some of the expensive administrative overhead that has been in healthcare historically and replace it with more efficient technology. So, you know, what once was, you talked about calling your doctor, it might be, you know, an entire call center of people that are staffed to pick up the phone, route it to the right person, and so forth. Now, maybe you're able to chat with, you know, a bot on the other side that can do that job just as effectively and route you to, you know, the right kind of solution without having the people involved. So I think, you know, as a way to make healthcare more efficient and less costly, I think that's a really exciting piece of AI. The other piece I would say, which we talked about a little bit there is so much data out there and so much that we can use to help predict healthcare outcomes. But because the data comes from so many different sources, it can be difficult to kind of synthesize and interpret. And I think that's where AI can be a tool to help us do that in a way that allows us to generate insights and use that data to ultimately impact people's health and improve people's health. So I would say those are probably the two big areas where I think AI will have a huge impact on healthcare in the years to come.
Right. And you're talking pretty positively about having an AI either completely oriented or at least an AI assisted response to a health situation or just a health question. And there are probably a lot of people listening to this cringing a bit at that or nervous about that, thinking, gee, you know, I don't want my doctor replaced by a machine learning model. But I'm wondering, did you ever see the episode of South Park that dealt with ChatGPT?
No, I haven't seen it.
okay, it's worth looking up, and it has nothing to do with healthcare. What it has to do with, though, on the healthcare front is how it might impact both, I guess, the quality of a response and the bedside manner that one receives. The plot, without going into too much detail, was that Stan had a girlfriend and had basically decided that their text exchanges were going to be taken over on his end by ChatGPT. And the girlfriend, gosh, I'm forgetting her name now, but you know, the Stan's girlfriend on South Park, she was over the moon because all of a sudden she was getting attention and care and high touch responses that she hadn't been receiving before. And so this caught on, and the young ladies of South Park were happy for a time until they figured out what was going on. And I think that if we apply that to the medical arena, hopefully with more disclosure on the front end, you might have people happier with their experiences that are enhanced by AI involved in the response than you would by, you know, harried or untrained or insufficiently knowledgeable people. Do you agree?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I do think it's important to note there's definitely a lot of nuance here. And I think a lot of these things with healthcare can be a bit of a double-edged sword in terms of the way you look at it. I think you can see the, you know, you can look at it from an optimistic way and kind of think about the good that could come of it. You could also easily think about the bad, right? In terms of, you know, if we have all of that data there, in theory, could it allow, you know, employers to assess people in a way that we're not comfortable with in the future? I think there are dark sides with AI and healthcare, for sure. But I think, you know, some of the positives are really exciting and worth noting here.
All right. We're talking a lot about different kinds of emerging technologies and AI and machine learning, synthesizing all that data. How do you think all of this will work to hopefully address what I think, and I hope many would agree, is one of the biggest problems we have with our healthcare system in the United States? And that is that its availability, cost, and quality is quite variable, depending on where you are, what resources you have, that we do not have an even sort of healthcare experience in this country. Do you think technology can help that?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I think, you know, when I think about things like some of the developments in terms of the drugs, as an example, that are, you know, coming out, and we think about like an oncology as a space, as an example, you know, there are drugs that have, you know, literally changed people's outlook from, you know, having a really poor expectation and, you know, in terms of life expectancy and whatnot, to extending that out to the point that they can live their life without worrying about their diagnosis. So I think technology can create better efficacy, more high quality healthcare, and just better outcomes for people, for sure. But I also think that what sometimes comes with technology can be higher cost, which, you know, you touched on as one of the big problems. So, you know, I think you can look at these things. There's a lot of nuance with them, but using that, you know, drug example, new drugs are extremely expensive. You know, I was hearing about one therapy in oncology that on average is $500,000 a person, and it can save their lives. But, you know, so it has really positive things in terms of the quality of healthcare, but it costs a whole lot of money. And so I think that with all of these things, there's the opportunity to, you know, enhance the quality, enhance the availability, the accessibility, but it might come with added cost in the short term, which, you know, is important to acknowledge. And I think the other point I'll just hit on is, you know, it's not necessarily evenly distributed, as you said, and we know that there, you know, from the social determinants of healthcare perspective, it is not equal in kind of, you know, the way that people can access healthcare and whatnot. So I don't think the effects will be equal either.
So we have definitely got the problem in our country that doctors want, you know, doctors are educated and you can't really fault them for, and they can, you know, make good money at their living. You can't really fault them for, you know, in general, perhaps maybe I'm generalizing too much, wanting to seek out a nice place to live and raise a family, and that those places are not always the places that have the most dire need for good healthcare professionals to come into the community and administer care. So do you think that telemedicine will help address that problem? Do you think that it should? Do you think that we need better incentives for people to move to areas more in need of doctors? And can technology help that?
I would say I think the problem is even more upstream in terms of, you know, certain areas, as an example, you know, certain areas might not have grocery stores that you know, have organic, you know, produce as an example, or kind of like, you know, ingredients that are, you know, one that a doctor would recommend. So, I mean, even I think that it's possible that people are set up for failure without even thinking about the sort of the doctors that are accessible there, or kind of the healthcare system that's around them. And so I think there are a lot of pieces here that in kind of thinking about the social determinants of health that play in aside from kind of doctor availability. I do think from a telemedicine perspective, it's amazing that doctors are more accessible than they've ever been. And I think that brings a lot of positives. But I also think that, you know, there's certain value that a doctor gets from seeing a patient in person. I think there are certain cues that you can't necessarily get asynchronously, for sure, and synchronously as well. And so I think, yes, it can be a really positive thing, but I don't think it can totally replace the value that in-person healthcare brings.
Right. I don't know. That's a thorny one. I just finished reading a really, really good and powerful book that I'll just toss out and recommend to you and our audience that definitely touches on lots of themes, including healthcare and the disparities in healthcare in the country. And it's by Barbara Kingsolver, and it's called Demon Copperhead. It's a play on David Copperfield and is supposed to be sort of a modern day retelling of that story in both Tennessee and Virginia. And I mean, for anyone, I've never read a Barbara Kingsolver book before, and she's an excellent author. And really, the themes that she hits on in this book are very, very powerful. And I would recommend it if you're interested in more on how healthcare can look different depending on where you live. Let's talk about how doctor visits are evolving, since we're on that topic, and where one lives might definitely impact what sort of access one has to these kinds of services. But there are a lot of startups in the healthcare arena that are aiming to disrupt the way the whole one-on-one with your doctor situation works. Forward is one that I've read a lot about and that you've pointed out. Forward is a company that is a tech unicorn which means it's received absolutely boatloads of financing and is opening offices throughout the country. And its focus is on a subscription model that is enhanced by insurance if you have it, but you don't have to have insurance. It winds up costing you about $150 a month. There are certain things that aren't included, like lab work, and of course, any sort of extensive healthcare that you might need, surgeries and things like that are not part of their plan. But what is part of their plan is you know, the day-to-day health maintenance kind of things. And they've incorporated a whole lot of technology into their organization as far as knowing the most about you to be able to provide the best level of care. And they're not alone. There are other competitive services out there: One Medical, Carbon Health, Parsley Health, Eden Health, and Crossover Health are some other ones that I found. Tell us more about these kinds of services and your gut reaction to them.
Yeah, so I think overall it's really positive. I think, you know, just we've talked a lot about kind of telehealth and the accessibility of doctors and healthcare. And I think that these types of companies are really trying to change the way that patients interact with healthcare. And I think it's a really positive thing. I think specifically to the doctor visits, you know, Forward is definitely one that I've looked at as an example. And they're definitely building a more kind of tech-focused experience that feels very different than probably going to the doctor did, you know, 30, 40 years ago, where, you know, they're really using a lot more data, using things to help predict kind of, you know, what you may experience later in life and kind of trying to intervene proactively versus reactively. And so I think that overall it's a really positive trend and makes, you know, healthcare feel a little bit less scary. And I think a good analogy that I had heard in the past is kind of like the experience of going to an Apple store. I think when they first kind of came out with that model was such a cool way to shop for technology that might've been very different than how we did it in the past. And I think, you know, obviously a very different space, but I think these healthcare companies are trying to make the feeling of going to the doctor a different experience that is maybe less scary and kind of, you know, burdensome than traditionally it has been, because ultimately, you know, people being on top of their visits, being on top of their healthcare is going to lead to better outcomes.
Do you have any personal experience with any of these kinds of services? Have you ever been to one, talked to their doctors?
Not directly, no. Most of what I'm basing on is kind of just interest in what I've read. I would say that I visited a couple of these kind of satellite type facilities during COVID a couple of different times trying to get COVID tests. And the experience as a patient to that degree was seamless. It was, you know, easy, efficient, and, you know, enjoyable. And so I think, you know, I can speak from that angle, but I know that the problems that these companies are addressing are much, much wider, and I don't have any direct experience with them from that lens.
Yeah, I'm really curious about them. Curious to see, you know, what sort of caps they have to put eventually on the numbers of patients they take on, how many patients they're able to handle and serve efficiently and with a high caliber of care. But it looks like what they've done is look at, you know, some of the other non-traditional doctor visit options that we have out there. You mentioned urgent care. We haven't talked about concierge medicine yet, but I'm sure that factored into their equation when they decided, okay, we're going to try and provide something that looks like that, but costs a lot less. And I think the subscription model is really interesting. $150 a month, and then it's less than that if you pay by the year. And I think that what might happen is people, you know, who are employed and have an option to have healthcare through their employer might take that option to the most extreme, the most catastrophic kind of care level, and then pay out of pocket, or maybe they get underwritten by their employer and have some kind of stipend to pay for a service like this, because it's, you know, incredibly reasonably priced, I think at $150 a month or thereabouts, for maybe not, you know, reasonable depending on the quality of care and the degree of care that you get. And certainly untouchable for a lot of people in the United States at that price and without insurance. But I just think it's a very potentially disruptive kind of business model for the insurance industry. I wonder if you agree. And I wonder overall what you think about the future of health insurance? Do we need it? How will it evolve?
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, I think health insurance is absolutely critical. And I think one of the big things we need to address the disparity in healthcare available is everyone needs to be covered by health insurance. And I think really, you know, there's the happy path, which, you know, health insurance may seem, you know, obsolete to healthy people that don't have, you know, big healthcare events or diagnoses that happen to them. But I think in the case that someone does get a bad diagnosis and you think about, you know, cancer or something of that nature, and you need to see specialists and you need to pay for these extremely high cost therapies, I think that's when you really need health insurance. And so I think from that perspective, I think health insurance is as critical as it has ever been. And I think, you know, healthcare costs have been skyrocketing. I think it's, you know, 18%-ish of GDP now. And so in my opinion, I worry about a world where people assume that they don't need to have health insurance. And then, you know, some of these, you know, more catastrophic diagnoses happen, what kind of situation it puts them in. But I do think that, you know, it's amazing to have these types of options for people who maybe, you know, see themselves as, you know, healthy and want to, are willing to spend more on their healthcare to get a different type of experience. I think, you know, these companies are offering a really cool solution for people. But I do think that health insurance is still critical. And I think getting everyone to be covered is really important in addressing some of that disparity we talked about earlier.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if, you know, as, and again, these entities like Forward and the others we mentioned are very new and not very widespread yet. But as they begin to present a better option than urgent care, which can be quite pricey, or concierge care, which can be quite pricey as well, or alternatively, conventional doctor visits, which not only are pricey, but, you know, in my own experience and anecdotally from those around me, are getting, the quality is declining rapidly. You know, you're getting sort of a, what was the baseball movie that was all about making baseball make money from the data?
Moneyball?
Yeah, that one. I feel like that kind of approach has been applied to medicine and winds up, you know, overburdening doctors with volumes of patients that they just can't reasonably be expected to care for in any kind of quality way. And then you're, you know, left kind of throwing up your hands saying, well, there are no good options. So maybe some of these new startup, you know, subscription-based models will provide a good option for your maintenance, healthcare, your checking in and checking up and staying healthy. And then people could have the option, or employers could have the option, they could elect through that and take care of scale and lowering costs that way of subscribing to some catastrophic care kind of insurance that winds up lowering costs for everybody and increasing care for everybody. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the promise I see of these kinds of services, or what I think they could do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you more pessimistic or?
No, I think, you know, I like to look at things glass half full. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, when you, from, you know, just personal experience, those around me, you never know when these sorts of things can happen. And I think when you have, you know, some sort of diagnosis for you or for a loved one, you want, you know, them to get the highest quality that is available to them, regardless of cost. And I think, unfortunately, if you're not insured, a lot of people have to make really tough decisions with kind of healthcare. And so I think health insurance, you know, it can seem obsolete when you don't use it except for your primary care coverage once a year that, you know, told you you were totally healthy. But I think you just never know with these things. So I would say I'm a bit more cautious in my thinking around it.
Right. And I, you know, our healthcare needs as a country aren't getting more manageable. I think they're getting more severe and desperate. There are so many more people with so many more different kinds of conditions. We've got a huge mental health crisis in the country, physical health crisis. You know, it's hard to separate the two. We have a huge drug addiction crisis in the country, and you throw the medical establishment and all of that at all of that, and it might not spit out satisfactory results. Do you have any good ideas from your position as someone on, you know, the startup side of the healthcare industry and the forward-looking side on what sort of things we should be thinking about to better address the disparities in healthcare in the country and the more sort of desperate needs that seem to be piling on to the equation?
Yeah. So I think, you know, I touched on already, I think everyone needs to be covered by health insurance. I also think there's a Medicaid reimbursement problem that needs to be addressed. I've heard and read about that there are some doctors who don't accept Medicaid patients because the rates are so low and they're, you know, losing money by taking on those patients. And so I think we need to have everyone covered, and we need to make sure that, you know, doctors can stay in business treating patients kind of across the, you know, spectrum in terms of different insurance types. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's one. The second is, I think we definitely need to invest more in social care and public health in general. I think you talked about, you know, a couple of different crises that are out there. I think it's critical for us to invest in kind of social care and public health to get on top of those different issues. And then the last one, I think, is kind of addressing some of the disinformation problem that exists. I know we talked a little bit about it beforehand, but I think, you know, making sure that people are making decisions based on the guidance from healthcare professionals that are treating them, I think is really important, versus making decisions based on information that may or may not be, you know, based in fact and science.
Right. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, that is such a huge problem to try and tackle. I know I'm guilty of this. I'm sure lots of people are, that when there's something a little bit amiss or awry and you're wondering about it and you're scratching your head, before you even call your doctor, you jump online and try and figure out what's going on. And who knows what sort of information you're getting from that source before you talk to your doctor. I mean, in my own case, it's been pretty good. Like, I've gotten some good ideas and I can go in and have an intelligent conversation with my doctor. But I could definitely see it going the other way. How do we control for that?
So it's a really good question, because I think people having access to information is really important. But I also think it's probably good to note that when you Google something, the first result may not be, I think healthcare is complex. Every person is unique. And so, you know, what I've found in my case, it often presents the doomsday scenario that isn't always accurate. I'll give a quick kind of story of mine where I was experiencing some dizziness, and I kind of looked up online, you know, I'm experiencing dizziness, what's going on? And the first kind of thing that popped up was heart attack. And, you know, I was suddenly very worried. Is there something going on? And it turns out, you know, I was just bad night's sleep, a little bit dehydrated, and felt a little bit off that day. But I think that it shows you that, you know, I think it's really good to have a lot of information available to people, but I think it's really important that you don't come to conclusions on your own, and that you use that information to have an informed conversation with a healthcare professional, exactly as you said, versus coming to a conclusion yourself that this is what's, you know, wrong with me and this is what I have to do, because, you know, that information that you may be basing that decision on may not be accurate. It may just be one side of the story. It may be for just a certain subset of individuals. And so I think it's amazing to have access to information, but important to draw conclusions with a healthcare professional versus on your own.
Yeah, the internet is no friend to hypochondriacs, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Do you think that social media companies bear a responsibility here, or are they just part of the free-for-all of the web?
It's hard to say. I think, you know, to a degree, I think they're a part of the free-for-all of the web. I think the disinformation problem is a really, really hard one to get in front of. And I think it's really, really top of mind, given everything that, you know, has gone on in the world in the last couple of years. You know, vaccines, I think, is the perfect example. And I don't think the problem, you know, starts and ends with social media companies necessarily. I think it's a bit more widespread than that. And I think it's a really tricky problem to tackle.
Yeah, definitely. I could see, I mean, my own thought is that children need to start learning in very early grades about the reliability of the information that they get on any number of topics, including healthcare, and how to verify and know what to trust. And that, you know, for those of us who aren't going to get it in elementary school, I don't know how we get that point across, but it would be helpful. Do you agree?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think kind of putting that into the curriculum, you know, just in terms of the things that I think we need to be educated on are changing in the world. And so I think kind of ensuring that people can evaluate the reliability of sources and go to, you know, what might be credible sources for information, and then use that information in the right way is totally critical. But I think it's a really challenging problem to solve, without a doubt.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier how having a robust technology infrastructure in our healthcare system might increase costs, but what technologies are out there? What ideas are out there that might help reduce costs across the board?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think AI, we touched on a bit, right? If, you know, AI can help remove some of the expensive administrative costs, I think that will help take some of the cost out of the system. So I would say that's one. A second one, I think that we haven't touched as much on, but it really around like preventative healthcare. I think if, you know, through screening, through kind of more data, you can predict a healthcare outcome before it happens and prevent it. If you can prevent an ER visit, the amount of cost that saves the system is pretty incredible. So I think preventative healthcare can be really powerful in addressing rising costs. And then I would say the last one is, you know, the government stepping in on some of the high cost drugs. I think insulin is a really good example where, you know, the life science companies have come out and lowered the price of insulin, which, you know, people need to survive. And I think, you know, where we can control the cost of drugs like insulin, I think will have a really meaningful impact on total spend.
So along the lines of technologies that may or may not reduce cost, but hopefully will enhance our overall healthcare profile, people know about watches. We talked about things like having a blood pressure monitor at home. What other kinds of devices can we expect to see integrated into our lives to help keep us healthy?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's really exciting is kind of the idea of merging these all in one to a degree. I mean, I think, you know, I have an Apple Watch that measures my activity and heart rate today. I'm sure it can do more than that, sleep and whatnot. But I think about a world where you have something that could track your glucose, your blood pressure, your heart rate, all of these things all in one, and then feed all of that data to the healthcare professional. I think that's a really it's a really cool and powerful tool for people to have. And so I think that's one. The second is, you know, this just the increase in kind of diagnostic testing, I think is important in terms of understanding, you know, getting labs to understand, you know, what your various levels look like to give kind of a baseline, and then taking steps to try and improve things like cholesterol or those sorts of things. I think kind of diagnostic testing increases for patients is really critical. And then the last one I would just say is, you know, advancements in being able to synthesize and use the breadth of data that's available in the healthcare world will be, you know, extremely helpful. So I threw a couple of out there, but I think those are all very exciting pieces.
Yeah, I do too. And of course, I'm sure you followed along with the saga of Theranos and Elizabeth Holmes, and on the diagnostic testing front, that didn't wind up being something that turned out to be as revolutionary or revolutionary at all as it was promoted to be. But the idea that we need to, first of all, make more uniform the kinds of testing that people have access to and that it is prescribed for people. I mean, in my own experience, just based on different doctors that I've seen, there's a huge amount of variety and variation in what one doctor will have you undergo as opposed to the next. And then, of course, there's the whole blood draw thing, which Theranos was out to disrupt. But even if we do have to sit there and have vials and vials of blood taken out of us, which is what's involved in doing a really extensive panel of blood work like you're talking about, do you see any sort of developments on the horizon that can bring some uniformity and make it more acceptable, or the norm, that we need more of this kind of testing in order to monitor people's health?
Well, I think, you know, some of the companies that we talked about earlier, like a Forward or a One Medical, you know, I think they're, a lot of those companies are implementing those types of practices. And I think hopefully that will sort of, you know, that will elevate experiences kind of across the healthcare system. I think hopefully, you know, these types of companies that come in to disrupt the way that healthcare is being delivered will hopefully elevate the whole system to adopt these types of practices. And so I think that the hope is that, you know, as these types of innovative companies that are doing healthcare differently but more effectively come into play, that, you know, other larger institutions will adopt similar practices and it will become more of the norm versus the disruptor. And, you know, ultimately we'll see the benefit of that to the healthcare system as a whole.
Right. Do you think that the role of the patient is getting bigger, the role of one's own autonomy in one's healthcare? Of course, if we're getting crappy information off the internet, take it with a grain of salt, but it seems to me like shared decision-making and patient empowerment, I think, are things I hear a lot about in the medical field as priorities. What do you think of those concepts, and how does that look going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, it's somewhat nuanced on how you look at it. But I think on the positive side, I mean, having far more information available to patients is really powerful if you use it in the right way, in terms of having that informed conversation with your doctor. Hey, I read about this. What are your thoughts? Kind of, I was also reading about this. Kind of, what, you know, what are the pros and cons of sort of the treatment I'm considering? You know, those sorts of things. I think having that information allows you to really have an informed conversation with your doctor, and I think that can be really powerful and help you make the best decision in kind of partnership with your doctor, versus having the doctor just recommend what he or she thinks is beneficial to, you know, 99% of the public. But again, I mean, I think we've talked about it a lot already on the negative side of, you know, there is disinformation out there. Self-diagnoses can be dangerous in terms of, you know, rushing to conclusions in terms of what you think you may or may not have. And so, again, I think you know, patient empowerment can be a really positive thing, but I think it also, it needs to be sort of in the right conversation and using information in the right way to really reap that benefit.
So Peter, we've talked a lot about a whole range of things. You've paid attention to these issues for a long time, and I'm wondering what you might think is coming at us that most of us don't know about yet or expect.
Yeah, I think one of the things we talked about a little bit is, you know, will kind of cybercrime kind of come into play in healthcare and kind of, you know, companies be trying to access confidential healthcare records or, you know, people trying to falsify healthcare information. I think that's something that's interesting to think about in the future and kind of plan around. The other thing that I would say is I think there's going to be a lot of difficult choices around very expensive drugs. I mean, the space that has been really interesting to me is, you know, the weight loss therapies and GLP-1s, that kind of trend. And, you know, when you think about the potential cost, I think, you know, those therapies can cost around $1,000 per month. And if you think about, you know, multiplying that by 12 months, multiplied by 40% of the US population suffers from obesity, you know, you can think about how crazy those numbers could get. And so I think there's going to be some difficult choices around these very expensive drugs, around who can access them, you know, those sorts of things. And so I think that's coming quite quickly as we think about trying to get healthcare spend under control, but also offer the most efficacious therapies to the public.
Right. And I haven't talked about this with my licensed and competent medical professional, but instead I'm just getting word of mouth from friends and the internet on those weight loss oriented drugs. But anecdotally, what I've heard is that when you go off them, the weight comes back. So you have to stay on. And so you're looking at a considerable expense if that's going to be your lifetime obesity management tool.
Exactly. Yep. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. All right. So what is on the horizon that most excites you in the healthcare arena?
I think the whole how AI will kind of make healthcare more efficient is incredibly exciting. I think the wearables, being able to do, to just access more information about your health and using that to kind of inform decisions with a healthcare professional is really exciting. And I think the continued development in drugs, you know, I think some of the data that we're seeing in spaces like oncology, where, you know, diagnoses used to be, you know, really dire and still are. But I think, you know, the outlook is a lot more hopeful, and I'm excited for continued development in that space in the future.
Yeah. I am curious about, you keep bringing up, the really difficult part of our healthcare system. And that is that for very serious life-threatening diseases, the treatments can be very, very expensive and hard to get. And, you know, of course they're difficult to go through as a patient, but it becomes even more difficult to go through as a patient and a patient's family when you're wondering all the time about how you're paying for these life-saving treatments. Do you think that our insurance system, as it exists today, handles that situation well, or could it, or should it be adjusted?
It's difficult. I think, you know, I think there are lots of people that get access to these drugs that, you know, wouldn't be able to afford them out of pocket. And so from that angle, I think, you know, the system is working to a degree, but I'm not going to say that I think it can't be improved. I know that sometimes, you know, there can be a lot of challenges in getting these, like, more expensive drugs covered through insurance, and things like prior authorizations, those sorts of things. And so I think, you know, there's definitely room for improvement, but I think ultimately, you know, the fact that people are able to get access to these drugs, get these drugs that they otherwise could not afford, shows the value that health insurance brings to people, you know, even in kind of the current state today. But I think, like everything, there's definitely room for improvement.
Do you have a position? Have you made up your mind one way or the other on whether it would be better to have more nationalized healthcare or whether it's better to have the laissez-faire economy bring competition to the field and hopefully bring down costs and provide variety of options?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, pros and cons to both. In my opinion, kind of where I stand on just sort of health insurance in general is that I think there needs to be an option out there for everyone, whether that falls on the spectrum of nationalized healthcare or in kind of the model where there are different companies competing. I think everyone needs to be covered. And I think that's critical in addressing some of the disparity that we see in the US and the difference in kind of the way that healthcare is distributed versus what you see in other countries. And so I think you can approach it in different ways, but I think ultimately what's critical, and I think kind of the metric that we should be anchored to is, you know, does every, you know, every person in the country have access to health insurance and the ability to access healthcare when they need to?
Right. Of course, the answer to that is no. So it's something that I think as a country, we need to address and really encourage the medical profession to also address from an ethical standpoint. On the topic of bioethics, are there any hot topics that have grabbed your attention beyond that one?
No, I think, I mean, that's the big one that I've really been interested in. Are there kind of other ones that you've been monitoring closely?
Oh, I guess, you know, it runs the gamut of, you've brought up, you know, how we handle people's information and how we make sure that it is secure and used in ways that they consent to, and in ways that they consent to in a valid way, in ways that benefit their well-being and not some third party that's profiting off the data. So I definitely think there's a whole universe of bioethical concerns around data. And also around treatments as well, you know, who has access to what, whether costs should be a factor or not in making decisions. Recently, I've been reading about potential issues. And again, you know, this is not something that I am any kind of expert on, and my understanding is that to the extent there are any concerns, they are minor and the whole system is safe. But I have been reading about concerns with generic drugs and quality control. And I'm wondering if you have too, and if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I haven't heard as much there, although I'm sure it's definitely a topic of conversation. I mean, I think there's, you know, generics are really important in terms of driving drug costs down. So I think the value that they bring to the system is, you know, it's apparent and it's, you know, monumental. But I think obviously to your point, we need to make sure that we're not sacrificing quality in that process. And so, you know, I'm not aware of kind of any sort of issues there, but I could definitely see that could become a concern in the future. And it's critical that, you know, the regulations that we have in place ensures that the quality of the drugs that we are getting, whether they be generic or brand, are, you know, parallel and you know, equal in terms of the efficacy that they bring to patients.
Right. All right. So in your entire young lifetime, what is the single most important change to healthcare and medicine that you've witnessed?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the advancement of therapies. You know, I have someone close to me that, you know, unfortunately was diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, the outlook 20 years ago was kind of a watch and wait approach of basically you progress until unfortunately the disease, you know, takes you. And now the outlook is that you can extend, progression-free survival by 20 plus years before you even have to think about a next treatment. And, you know, having someone close to me go through that, I am just so thankful that that happened now versus happening, you know, 20 years ago. And I think, you know, I'm really excited about the idea that what could that look like 20 years from now? And so, I think for me, the technology behind these new therapies that are coming and the kind of them using kind of your body to be able to fight off these diseases is just so cool. And I'm excited to see where it goes from there.
Yeah, I'm excited too. And that's a really high note to end on. Thank you so much, Peter Joyner, for joining us today. And we really, really appreciate all of your insights and wisdom today that you've shared with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, Denise, and really appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll be in touch soon.
I'm sure we will. Thank you, Peter. Take care. And thanks to all of you for tuning in to Uneven Distribution here on the Hearsay Culture Network. We do this show twice monthly. Bi-monthly would be every other month, I believe. So we do it twice monthly, along with a host of other shows here on the network, which I encourage you to check out if you have not already. And I also encourage you to check out our subscription options so that you can gain even further insights from the guests that we have on our shows. You can gain access to video content and a whole bunch of other nice perks that we hope we're able to offer you in exchange for your further support of our network and our offerings here. Thanks so much, Peter. We'll see you next time on Uneven Distribution.
Thanks so much.